In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hey, it's Ryan Oliver from Atlanta, Georgia, America's largest recreational tennis city. And it's time for another great edition of the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, folks, and welcome to the first of two weekly tennis podcasts this week, or bi-weekly tennis podcasts for this week, as we get into the nitty-gritty of the 2022 US Open series. Thank you to Ryan Oliver, who you heard there in our intro. Ryan is from America's largest recreational tennis city. Interested to know the metrics on that, Ryan. Let me know who's compiling that data. David, where do you think Solihull ranks among the UK's recreational tennis cities?
I don't know, but I think at least I've added to it a little bit over the last week, having defeated Solihull Simon, 6-3, 6-3. Jeremy Bates was also from Solihull, would you believe? So I don't know. It feels kind of quietly thriving, but I don't...
Jeremy Bates was from Solihull?
Yes, apparently so.
So hang on, there have been two British number ones from Solihull?
Well, you know, I could have been the third, if only.
I was expecting to make fun of Solihull in this segment, but that is actually quite impressive.
Yeah.
That is a disproportionately Tennessee town.
It is, and yet there's not a lot of it around, I don't think. I mean, you know, there are tennis places to play, but I think I wouldn't be claiming what Ryan's claiming necessarily, put it that way.
Yeah, Ryan, we're not doubting the veracity of what you say. We'd just love to see the numbers to back it up.
Sounds a lot like we're doubting, doesn't it?
Matt, is Bognor your nearest town? Where do you think Bognor ranks? You live right round the corner from a tennis club.
I do, yes. And unlike David, I'm not really contributing to the tennis going on here. I do need to get round to that. I grew up right by Surbiton Tennis Club. I feel like that's up. That's got to be up there as a tennis venue
Surbiton,
in this country.
Surbiton must punch above its weight.
I think so.
Absolutely. David, could your recent run of tennis form have anything to do with your brand new racket and strings?
I think it could do. I'll be honest with you. 2 days earlier, if you'd have asked me that question, I would have given you a rather more negative answer, because I played doubles and I couldn't get the ball in. I kept overhitting, and I was convinced. You know, it's the first time I'd ever used the racket. I was convinced it's the racket. I can't get the ball in the court. And then when I played the singles 2 days later, I seriously considered using my old Wilson racket. And and I thought, no, that's not the way to go, is it? That's I'm blaming the equipment. And so I had another go, and I pulled my margins in, as they say you should do.
Oh.
Basically, I stopped trying to play like one of the players I watch every week.
Did you put some extra shape on the ball, David?
I did. And lo and behold, I actually didn't double faults at all, and I didn't make any like glaring unforced errors, and I allowed Solihull Simon to commit them all.
My dad would like to know how you're getting on with the new strings.
I liked it. I mean, I don't have any idea really whether it was responsible in any way for my good play, but I really enjoyed playing with the racket. So, you know, I've just been in a great mood ever since that win. because they're few and far between. I've felt great all week.
Well, we're all enjoying our brand new Wilson rackets. If you would like to bask in some Wilson glow, you have the opportunity. You, I mean the listener, not you, David. Oh. You, the listener, have the opportunity to do just that, because tomorrow, Tuesday the 9th of August, we're launching a competition in our newsletter for Friends of the Tennis Podcast. So all friends will be eligible to enter the competition. In association with Wilson, they are offering a pair of tickets to the US Open. It's for the day session on Tuesday the 6th of September. It's a pair of tickets on the Louis Armstrong Arena, so the equivalent of Court 1 at Wimbledon, but it also, that ticket gives you access to all other courts besides the Arthur Ashe Stadium. So you need to make sure you're signed up to the newsletter. And if you want to enter the competition, you need to become a friend of the Tennis Podcast if you aren't already. Then, of course, you also get access to the 19 exclusive podcasts that we've already produced for friends this year and many, many more to come. So the link to do all of that, to sign up to the newsletter first and foremost, and then to sign up as a friend, is in our show notes. And by the way, our flights are booked for the US Open, so we will be there.
Yay.
Alongside our competition winners. Yay!
I'm so excited just hearing you say that. Oh, I can't wait.
New York, I have missed you, and I can't wait to come back. We're all going to be on the same flight, which is great for me because it means help carrying my bags. Excellent. And wonderful company. We can talk about tennis the whole way to New York, just like we're going to do for the next 45 minutes or so, because the US Open Series got underway in earnest this week. We're going to start in San Jose in the WTA 500 event that was going on there. Won by Daria Kazatkina. She beat Shelby Rogers 6-7, 6-1, 6-2 in the final. Matt put together the agenda for this week, as he always does. And I'm not saying it's not sterling work, Matt, but absolutely no mention of puppies in the San Jose section. And I do feel like that's probably what the people want.
I just knew there was no need to write it down because it's
okay.
It's right, you know, on the tip of your tongue. And I was correct.
You get at it. About oh my gosh, I've forgotten her name, Victoria Kuzmova, and I get
and I did this
whenever,
week, by the way.
Yes, you did. Sorry, she's wearing high knee socks. Kuzmova,
it's a development.
She's trying anything. I get atted when any dog features in the tennis world in any meaningful way, and I appreciate that. And this week, puppies were carried onto court for no apparent reason, and P.S. there doesn't need to be a reason, by the finalists in San Jose, and I absolutely loved it. Shelby Rogers walking onto court cradling a tiny little puppy is just wonderful. And she had quite a week, did Shelby Rogers, but not quite as good a week as Daria Kazatkina, who is somebody that, you know, we try and remain neutral as much as possible, but I'm going to find it hard not to root very, very hard for Daria Kazatkina in every match that I see her play from now on. You know, it's a feel good win to see her do that.
Yeah, and the reason for that is the conversation you and Charlie and Matt all had a couple of weeks ago in my absence, which I was so interested to hear that show and that conversation about her coming out and the interview she'd given and the heartfelt emotions that were so raw in that interview. And this is the first time, so I don't know whether it's the first time she's played since then, so it's certainly the first time I've seen her play tennis since then. And I mean, I'm reluctant to draw sort of cause and effect in somebody's results, but certainly she played in a free manner, in a manner that was truly uplifting, actually, to watch as a. I mean, look, you know that I've been a fan of hers ever since I first clapped eyes on her, just as a tennis player. I mean, I've never met her personally. She always comes across really well, I think, whenever you do see her speak. But
you've predicted her to win pretty much every week apart from this one.
Yes, and I've gained points once in about 4 years as a result. But and of course, this is the week that I didn't decide to back her. So, Jessica Pegula, it's all your fault. But just watching Kasatkina and the players she came through, I mean, she had a really tough run to this title. She beat Aryna Sabalenka. She beat Paola Badosa. She beat Elena Rybakina. You know, these are amazing players that she beat on her way, and then Shelby Rogers in the final. And the final sets that she was putting down on people, she put 3-6 love sets down on people in second or third sets to close out matches. Fantastic form she found. And I think you're right. I mean, I think I will always sort of root for her as a tennis player, but there is something else there now as well.
Yeah, there was a definite similarity to all of her matches, I felt, this week. Kind of, as you said, David, that list of opponents, they're all stylistically quite similar. They've all got a lot more power than Kasatkina does. Rybakina, Sabalenka, Rogers in the final. And she went down a set, didn't she, a lot against those players, and then just took over kind of in the second and third sets, won them really convincingly.
It's like the first set. It's like she goes out and thinks, first set, fact-finding mission. Second set, start doing the thing.
Destruction mode. And yet it's such a soft destruction because it is still with variety and it's in her own way. I felt like she was probably hitting the ball a little bit harder than I have seen, but still it was her tennis, and I think she backs herself physically in these matches as well. And yeah, there really was something quite powerful about her winning just so soon after giving that interview. And yeah, talk about someone looking free and happy, and she played like that. And of course, this is, I think, the oldest women's only tournament, isn't it, in San Jose. It was co-founded, I think, by Billie Jean King, and there was something kind of perfect about that as well, you know, her winning that after coming out and taking such a political bold stance. It just, you know, we probably look for meaning when there isn't any sometimes, but that to me stood out as a kind of a narrative of this week. And her girlfriend was obviously front and center, and in all of the celebrations, it was just a really uplifting week to watch, and for her as well.
Do you know, Catherine? Just quickly, your point about her being on a fact finding mission. I almost think that that may be true about the way she approaches tennis matches, because I think she's that good. She's that brainy as a tennis player that maybe she does go out and feel an opponent's game and then work out how she's going to just pick it apart.
I mean, variety is back, isn't it, in tennis? Not exclusively, you know, we've just had Elena Rybakina win Wimbledon, who, she's not one-dimensional, but she's a power player. She's a more sort of 90s or perhaps noughties style women's tennis player, you know, the era that Lindsay Davenport and Serena and Venus Williams ushered in. But there are more sort of Hingis types coming back, aren't there? There's a real mixture of styles that can all be successful, and I love it.
Yeah, so do I. I wonder whether as well, maybe somebody like her, who she's almost like the extreme of that, I wonder whether she has watched Ons Jabeur this last 6 months, and before that, Ash Barty, who she'd beaten at Wimbledon 1 year, and Iga Świątek to some degree, but particularly Ons Jabeur, and just thought, well, if she can do it, if she can reach a Grand Slam final playing like that and win big titles, really, why can't I do that?
Yeah, and I think from a game style point of view, she should be inspired by those players you mentioned, and from Rybakina winning Wimbledon, that should inspire a player like Kasatkina, because I felt like we had a little shift at Wimbledon this year with Rybakina winning. It wasn't one of the very top players like we've had winning slams in Barty and Iga Świątek, and it wasn't a complete surprise like Krejcikova or Raducanu. It was one of those players who's been really good on tour and took a step up, and I feel like Kasatkina is kind of in that zone in the ranking. She's back inside the top 10 now, I think. I still think probably there are some players who could hit her off the court if they have a really good day. But she can also, as you said, pick apart opponents. And I feel like Kasatkina, you know, she's third in the race this year, as Nadal would want us to bring up. She's been one of the best players, and it feels like there's steps for her still to take. Wow. Yeah, behind Świątek and Ons Jabeur.
And that was with not being able to play Wimbledon. Not that she would have gained any points from being able to play Wimbledon. So actually, ignore that comment. But let's remind ourselves that she was unable to play Wimbledon.
It does put into perspective the situation we're in the world, though, doesn't it? And in the tennis world, how that's been affected. That you think about those things, and then you have to remind yourself how it's changed, how the world has how the sport has been impacted.
And is it? I mean, that's one of the sort of storylines across last week, how successful Russian players were. We'll come on to talk about Daniil Medvedev winning in Los Cabos. Andre Rublev played some good tennis. We had a women's winner in Washington as well, Lyudmila Samsonova. The Russians have, in the initial stages, come back from their ban pretty strongly. Just staying in San Jose for a moment, because there are a couple of other notable results and performances that we should touch upon. Coco Gauff facing Naomi Osaka and winning. And just, I mean, I was so sure she was going to win that tournament after she beat Naomi Osaka. I thought that was a brilliant performance. One of you two, it was a rare moment where I couldn't tell which one of you was in control of our Twitter account. One of you tweeted, just how good is Coco Gauff right now? I think probably David.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, you could probably tell that because she lost in the next round.
To a really good Paula Badosa performance. And that's a good week for Badosa, reaching the semifinals. But after that Osaka win, was I wrong to? I mean, obviously I was wrong, but was I naive? Was I silly to think? I just thought this is tournament winning tennis from Coco Gauff. Wow,
she was stunning. She was absolutely brilliant in that match. I think it was the fourth time they'd played each other. I think they've got a very even head to head. It is actually developing into quite a nice rivalry. She just looks so good. Her movement, knowing when to pull the trigger on her shots, the forehand stood up really well. Obviously, we know how good the backhand is. It was all there. It was a brilliant performance. And she had to face quite a lot of adversity in that second set when it looked like she wasn't going to have to. She was absolutely cruising. And then suddenly Osaka had this real grit and fight back, and I think saved 7 match points before eventually Gauff won it on her 8th. And yeah, I really felt like she was going to go on to probably win the tournament as well. I was with you. I must say, I felt quite good about Osaka, given the way she did come back in that match. She was well off the pace to begin with, a lot of errors. She just hasn't played that much tennis, of course. But she looks fit. She's got her dad back with her, which I think she seems really kind of happy about. She's given some really positive quotes about sort of the place she's in her life at the moment. And I just think if she can get some matches under her belt in Toronto and in Cincinnati over the next couple of weeks, I kind of saw enough in that fight back in that second set to suggest that she might not be that far away, Osaka, from really starting to play well again. This is obviously the time of year that she likes, back on the hard courts. And that excites me as well. I was sort of buoyed by that whole match, really, for both players.
Yeah, me too. Brilliant to see her back and to know that this is just the start of quite a long sequence of her playing tournaments. It's been too much stuttering with Naomi Osaka for her and for us, I think, in terms of really getting invested in her progress. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what she'll do over the course of the next few weeks. There was a win for a familiar-ish name, Elizabeth Mandlik, who is the daughter of Hanna Mandlikova. She qualified and won a round before losing 7-6 in the third in the second round to Paula Badosa. Now, I remember I interviewed Hanna Mandlikova a couple of years ago now during, you know, the real thick of COVID, in one of the lockdowns for a Wimbledon relived episode about Jana Novotná. It was an absolutely wonderful interview she gave, incredibly moving. And if you want to listen to that, it's in our feed, available for you to listen to. And she had just come off the practice court with her daughter, and the chit chat between us before we started the interview was about what she's doing with her life now. And she'd said she's, you know, I'm sort of back on the road as a coach. And I said, oh, that's interesting. Who are you coaching? She said, my daughter. And so I thought, oh, I'll look out for that name. And then I saw the name Elizabeth Mandlik pop up. And I thought, huh, that's an interesting one. And so it turned out to be. So watch this space for Elizabeth Mandlik. I didn't actually see any of her tennis, just saw the results. What do we think of her?
Yeah, I saw a bit of her match against Barossa, and she served for it twice and just couldn't quite close it out. Quite an aggressive game style. I thought Barossa gave some interesting quotes afterwards where she said that she was surprised by how good she was, and probably speaking for all of us. And yet at the same time, Mandlik had just beaten Jill Teichmann in qualifying and Alison Risk in round one. Those are very, very impressive wins. But it was the first time I think she'd even hit with top 100 players, she said. She just hasn't had that exposure, that experience. And yeah, she really played well. She's sort of risen up the ITF ranks. And she said she wants to win Wimbledon because it's the one that Hannah, her mother, didn't win.
Oh, a great line.
Yeah, that's a good interview on the WTA website with her. And yeah, so as you said, one to watch. I wonder whether she'll get a US Open wild card, for example. She got a qualifying wild card into San Jose last week.
Well, she get a qualifying wild card into the US Open and win it.
It's the done thing now.
That's how it rolls. It didn't mention much about Shelby Rogers, by the way, the beaten finalist. I saw her first round match against Bianca Andreescu and was really impressed by her. She looks fit and strong and happy and healthy and clutching puppies. She just looks in such a great place, and she's a really lovely presence on a tennis court. Bianca Andreescu got slightly worrying looking treatment in that match for her lower back and hip area, which is just that there was a moment when the physio came out and was assessing her, and she was telling her to get into position for the treatment, which was lying on her front, and the physio just looked at her and said, Bianca, you know the drill. Aww. I know, and my heart just sunk because we all know the drill. So look, don't know, big week for her this week in Toronto, isn't it? Her home tournament, former champion. She won it, of course, before going on to win the US Open. Wish her well. But Shelby Rogers was brilliant. And she's just a sort of lovely presence on tour, isn't she? Even when she's not clutching puppies.
She seems to have grown in confidence as to who she is as a tennis player. I mean, I think she's always been comfortable in her own skin. That's how she's come across as somebody incredibly popular in the locker room. But I think she had that run at the US Open last year. She beat Ash Barty, but then she's built on that. She came into this year clearly determined to just get the best out of whatever she's got, and she is, as you said, looks to be in superb shape. I think she beat Maria Sakkari for the loss of about four games. You know, these are proper wins, and I mean, perfect surface for her. She's going to have the crowd behind her. It could be quite a month coming up.
Doesn't sound great for your big Greek prediction, that does it, Matt?
The whole year has not been great for my big Greek prediction, if we're being honest. I did see some interesting quotes from Sakkari over the weekend in Toronto, talking about just how tough she's found it being one of the top players in the world, and just how she has not enjoyed the pressure on her. And I think quite a moment for her to sort of admit that. It sounded like she'd really spoken to her team quite a lot. She spoke about it in press, really candid. And she said you're going to see a new Maria over the next 3 months. So maybe there's life yet in my prediction.
she needs to pass that on to Stefanos as well, who, yeah, let's not get into him for the time being. The doubles title in San Jose was won by Yifan Xu and Zhao Shan Yang. In Washington, we had another Russian winner on the women's side. Ludmila Samsonova beat Kaya Kanepi 4-6, 6-3, 6-3 in the final. She had beaten Emma Raducanu en route to that title in the quarterfinals. I watched quite a bit of that match. Good week for Raducanu. Two wins, 7-6, 6-1 eventual defeat in that quarterfinal. Ludmila Samsonova, who came onto all of our radars, I think, last year, didn't she? When she won the title in the lead up to Wimbledon and the Wimbledon wildcard suddenly became a thing and then sort of dropped off the radar again quite quickly. And here she is, she's back. Maybe she'll just be one of those, hey, here I am, popping up, winning a title every now and again type players.
Somebody you don't want to have to face if you're a top player. And because she's dangerous. Am I right in thinking she was on your radar, Matt, at the Billie Jean King Cup finals as one of the threats? And I mean, I watched most of this final against Kaya Kanepi, who by the way, is 37 years of age and was trying to win her first title in 9 years. She couldn't quite get over the line. She had a bit of treatment. But this was a match that was just two players trying to sock each other off the court at the same time, the whole time. It was very, very entertaining on that level, just because it was, some of the tennis was silly. You know, they were trying shots that just were not on at all. And it did lead to a heck of a lot of errors. I mean, I think it's quite a difficult match for a crowd to get into because there aren't that many rallies in it. But as a first round opponent, I mean, Samsonova, I don't know what she's ranked today with the new rankings, but she came into last week as 60 in the world. You know, so chances are she probably won't be seeded at the US Open, or maybe she'll get into the outskirts of it, but she could end up playing a top player quite early on, and you wouldn't want to play her on a hard court. She's got proper ammunition.
Yeah, I agree. I think she's up to around 40 now, and you know, it'll probably take another really good week, I guess, to get into the seedings. Yeah, so, but you're right, David. It was at the Billie Jean King Cup last year where, obviously, I'd seen her in Berlin. I'd seen her win that title on the grass, but It was in Prague where I was so impressed, because that was a stacked Russian team, and it was Samsonova that emerged as kind of the key player. I think she won all five matches she played that week across singles and doubles, and just took players apart with her power. I did expect her to kick on a bit more this season, but perhaps you're right. Perhaps just it's so difficult to constantly put that kind of tennis together. But when you do put it together, it's going to be winning tennis like we saw this week. She's really dangerous.
Do you know what else is silly, by the way?
Go on.
The temperatures in Washington in early August. It's too much,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I've seen over the years players who traditionally have been known to love the heat look so uncomfortable in the heat in Washington. I remember Andre Agassi playing Stefan Edberg in 1995, and there was vomiting on the court from both players, you know, and it was, and Agassi loves the sort of, not necessarily enjoying the heat himself, but enjoying what the heat does to his opponents because of his game style, the way he can make them suffer. Brad Gilbert would always say to me, Andre's a great heat player because he makes the opponents suffer. He would always tell us this. But you know, watching Andy Murray play his match against Mikhail Imer the other day.
Oh, God.
That's enough to put you off ever wanting to go to Washington to, I think you said, to play sport, Catherine. Remind me never to do sport in Washington, D.C.
I watched Andy Murray age.
Yeah.
He's
thinking, why
match?
Have I signed up for this tournament right there? And look, it's a great tournament. I think that they have a lovely approach to and pride in that tournament, and I think the tournament director does a really good job, and they really make it the best they can be. But just as a physical experience for so many players there, that is not healthy. Those conditions.
It felt to me like there were more day session matches this year. I mean, I could be wrong, but
they used to start play at 4 p.m. in the afternoon, I believe.
Right.
I think it might be because it's gone back to a mixed event, which I obviously support, you know, very generally speaking. But I think they just need extra time in the schedule to fit the matches in.
Yeah.
And that means starting earlier.
And the men's draw is a 64 draw, isn't it? I mean, I think seeds have buys, but you know, there's a lot of matches to get through compared to, for example, Queens, which is an equivalent event. It's only 32 draw. And yeah, I watched, I think Fritz Evans was on at the same time as Raducanu Osorio. I was watching those two matches double screening, and Raducanu and Osorio were just having these really long, grueling games and rallies. It was almost 3 hours for two sets. And then Fritz had to retire against Evans, and it was just grueling and tough to watch, let alone play. You know, just players with ice packs on their heads and round their bodies at changeovers.
This is Taylor Fritz, the San Diego native. You know, he did do a post about it afterwards, didn't he, saying that his injury had prevented him from doing, you know, the full sort of fitness work that he would have wanted to have done by that stage of the hard court season. But even so, you know, he's not in bad shape. And there he was just looking. He talked about being dizzy, didn't he? He said his vision was going blurry. And that's what it looked like, you know, it looked like one of those cartoons where they've got birds circling above their head. It was just, yeah, pretty tough to watch, actually, at times. Women's title, men's title, rather, sorry, won by Nick Kyrgios, the Washington DC specialist. It is absolutely the Nick Kyrgios sweet spot, isn't it, ATP Washington. He beat Yoshihito Nishioka 6-4, 6-3 in the final, and he did the double. Won the doubles title with Jack Sock beating Ivan Dodig and Austin Krajicek. And am I right that there was one day where he played two singles and a doubles match, or one and a half singles and a doubles match? And I was looking at that schedule thinking, he's going to pull out of this double, surely. And he didn't. He played it all. He won it all. And on he cracked.
Yeah, he wasn't broken the entire week on his serve, and that's despite an absolute epic against Francis Tiafoe, who he had to save five match points against in order to win. And I watched the second set tiebreak of that, which Kyrgios won 12-10. He's a set down. He won that 12-10, and that included the fourth match point. Tiafoe smacked this serve down at 127 miles an hour right into the corner. And Kyrgios, you know, with that two-handed bunt return of his, he just put the ball on the back edge of the line for a clean winner. I mean, it was, you know, I suppose you might say there's an element of luck to that, but that particular shot of his was, and the serve, the two-handed backhand on the serve, was so reliable all week long. And I mean, look, you're right, this is familiar territory. He has won that tournament before and looked incredibly happy with life there, and then it hasn't kind of led to much after that. I would say it was a more professional win this time than last time. Last time was all the fun of the fair kind of thing. This was playing tennis most of the time and sticking to that, although Francis Tiafoe looked a bit angry at the end of his match against him. But no, this was a very dangerous looking Kyrgios.
It was a result, I mean, in keeping with his season, really. I mean, I know it's the first time he's won a title this season, but he has been playing very well whenever he's played. And I do think I go back a lot to that quote he gave, kind of jokingly, I think, straight after Wimbledon, but it was serious at the same time, where he said that, you know, if he'd won Wimbledon, he might have lost his motivation. I actually think that losing that final, in a way, is probably the best thing in terms of prolonging his career, because I think he's got a little bit of a taste for it now in terms of wanting to see what happens when he properly dedicates himself and when he really does put his mind to it. I think he wants to find out how good he can get. And you know, a week like this, he played players that, you know, were kind of comfortable for him, I think. He's still only beaten Tsitsipas as a top 10 player in this run. We haven't really seen him play, you know, the absolute top players, I suppose. Obviously, Nadal pulled out at Wimbledon. That wasn't his fault. But I'm interested to see, for example, next week when he plays potentially Daniil Medvedev in his first match in Canada. Sorry, in his second match. If he beats Sebastian Baez, he would play Daniil Medvedev. That would be a fantastic test for both of them, I think. So it's kind of tough to judge just exactly where Kyrgios's level is. But, you know, an unmotivated Kyrgios is a dangerous player. A motivated Kyrgios is a different thing altogether, I think.
And our favourite of his signature moves is back.
Or at least it was once in one match. He did the thing where he goes to the back of the court, asks somebody where he should serve a match point, and did as he was told. Actually, I think he missed the serve, but then he repeated it in the second serve and won the match. But yeah, it further example of how the place fits him. But he generally kept it to tennis. I mean, he still jabbers away, which is clearly something. I know he gets on very well with Francis Tiafoe, and they'd been talking about having their first ever match against each other, and there was good vibes between them. But Tiafoe got fed up of the constant yapping to the umpire, and if you're an umpire, I would not be able to handle it. I would not. I would have to just tell him to shut up.
Obligatory question here. Does it mean anything? Matt seems to think it might mean something a bit more than the last time Kyrgios won Washington 2019 and we boarded the hype train and it all ended with that sort of slightly depressing podcast recorded in my hotel lobby where we watched him come back from his absolute tonking by Andrei Rublev in the third round.
Well, I think he is playing the most consistent professional tennis of his career. Whether that means anything, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Does winning the singles and doubles, is he fitter?
Yeah.
Is he fitter than he's ever been?
Yeah, I would say so.
That mean something?
I think that is a factor, actually. I think playing the doubles is good for him, physically and mentally. I think all in every way, I think it is good for him.
Staging a revolution, David, would be good for any.
I mean, in that regard, he has been good to his word because he's kept on playing doubles, which I really doubted whether he would do. I thought he would play the Australian Open and lose interest. To be honest,
well, he likes it, doesn't it? He likes team sports. He's open about that. He prefers team sports to tennis. So, yeah, keep the revolution going, Nick.
If we're talking about it meaning something, are we talking about the US Open? I guess we probably are.
Yes, we are, Matt. I'm saying, is he going to
win
the US Open?
Well, look, I mean, he reached the final of the last Grand Slam and he lost to a player who's probably not going to be there.
Mm.
So, is he in the mix?
Please finish
Maybe.
That sentence.
Is he in the? He might be in the mix for the US Open right now.
Is he in the? If you're doing the mix now, is he in it?
I think he probably is, you know.
I'd say no, but I might change my mind. We'll see. Okay.
David Law is yet to put Ons Jabeur in a mix, so he's.
I think I've
stingy.
I think I've let that go now. Catherine.
Is Daria Kazatkina in the mix?
Oh, that's a good question. I haven't really compiled a mix yet.
That's why I'm asking, putting you on the spot.
I mean, I'm going to say no, but then I haven't really given a lot of thought to the mix yet.
Remember the balls at the US Open, David. Big factor.
I mean, if he serves like that, I just still think best of five sets where you don't have the help of the surface, he is going to malfunction. He is going to get in his own way. Somebody's going to hang on in a match. Players peak at Grand Slams. He's going to play against players who are playing their best stuff at that tournament. And he is going to come apart at the seams, most likely, because that is the history. That's what we've got to go on.
I think what you just said is not in the mix.
Yeah, I did.
Mm. But Matt, he's in your mix. We have a mixed disagreement.
This feels like a shake-up. I feel like David would normally be the one putting Kyrgios in the mix,
yeah.
And I would not be. What happened?
About you, Catherine? What would you say?
I think I agree with you, David. I would be surprised, given everything you said, that I wholeheartedly agree with. I would be surprised if Nick Kyrgios won the US Open. But let's see. Let's see what he puts together over the next couple of weeks.
Just on the guy he beat in the final, Yoshihito Nishioka. I don't know whether this affected things at all, but he played a 3 hour 49 minute match against Dan Evans, who has still yet to beat him. 5-0 that head to head now.
Wow. Nishioka has a pigeon.
I love a quirky head-to-head.
I'm sorry, I very nearly texted Evans to say, you'll get him one day. And then I thought better of it.
After 4 hours in 400 degrees.
four days on, that. I still haven't done it yet.
We should mention, before we move on, by the way, from Nick Kyrgios, that his court date relating to a common assault charge following allegations of assaulting an ex-girlfriend has been pushed back by 3 weeks. It was meant to take place on August 2nd. It's now scheduled for August 23rd. But Kyrgios, we understand, is not required to attend that court session, as he'll be legally represented. So from what we understand, he is permitted to compete in the US Open. A couple of other notable things from Washington: Mikhail Immer reaching the semi-finals, beating Andy Murray, or the sort of the remains of Andy Murray along the way. He can look quite some player.
Lovely player, Mikhail Immer.
Lovely player to watch. I don't understand why he's not better, because I tune into him when he's, I guess, you know, when he's already recorded a result or two, and when he's generally playing well, and I think, bloody hell, this guy's great. And then he'll disappear for a bit, completely off the radar. I don't quite understand what's holding him back.
Mm. No, me neither, because, like you said, whenever I watch him, I'm always impressed. He's such a great athlete and such a great mover on the court. And it was actually this time last year, more or less, when he got to the Winston-Salem final. He beat Alcaraz, he beat Tiafoe. And I really felt like, okay, that was the moment he was going to make his move. And he's drifted back outside the top 100 before this week. He's back in there now, thanks to these points. But yeah, he was really good. And again, the pattern of his matches was the same. He kept winning the first set, losing the second, and then coming back and winning the third. He did it against Murray, Korda, Rusevori. It was really, you know, big wins, impressive wins, winning so many points on return. He couldn't really get near the Kyrgios serve. But yeah, he's one that I would like to make a move up the rankings, because I think he's great in interviews as well. He's charming, he's funny, he's good quotes. And he's a good story generally. And I think, other than the odd result here and there, he loses in the first round so often.
A lot, yeah. Just before we move on to Los Cabos, I should have mentioned that the women's doubles title in Washington was won by Jessica Pegula and Erin Routcliffe of New Zealand. They won two matches in a day. They get a lot of thunderstorms in Washington this time of year, so they had a couple of washouts later on in the day, matches held over. And they also recorded a 6-3, 5-7, 12-10 win over Anna Kalinskaya and Katie McNally in the final. I think that's what you call earning victory the hard way. David, no, you don't get points for Jessica Pegula winning the doubles title.
Oh.
Mm. Oh. Just head that one off at the pass, because I definitely knew you were going to ask.
Great idea.
And Jessica Pegula there beating Katie McNally is interesting, because Pegula now seems to be partnering Goff, other than that week, of course, but they're entered into Canada together rather than McNally and Goff.
Which is a shame, because I would say Makoko is one of my more preferred doubles partnership nicknames. I know we don't like many of them, but I do quite like that one. And it is no more, alas. Submissions for a nickname for Pegula and Goff are very much
welcome.
This
is what I don't like about it, is this: we have to shoehorn in something just because they're a partnership.
No, we don't. But if somebody comes up with a good one, then
that's
fine. We'll take it under advisement.
But somebody will always have a shortened version, even if it's rubbish. Even if there's no possible fit.
Not us. We've got higher standards than that. On to Los Cabos, where Daniil Medvedev beat Cam Norrie, the defending champion, 7-6-6-love in the final. He's back, I guess, Daniil Medvedev. He looks well rested. He looks relaxed and happy. He looks, you know, the Daniil Medvedev that we've seen being a destroyer on hard courts. I really didn't know what to expect from him, given his time on the sidelines for reasons that we've discussed. And I feel like that's actually quite a big week for him.
Mm. I think it's big for him, as you said, to come back from not playing for a while. And also to win a final again. You know, he hadn't won a final since the US Open last year. He'd lost five in a row and put in a couple of quite
dodgy
bad performances. I'm thinking mainly of the one against Zverev in the ATP finals and the one against our man Tim van Rijthoven a few weeks ago. But he looked good in this one. And Norrie, I think, broke back, didn't he, right at the end of that first set when Medvedev had set points and Norrie broke back. And right there, I was thinking, oh, here we go again, maybe for Medvedev. And then he didn't lose another game in the entire match. He just stretched his advantage and was brilliant. Some of his backhand winners, some of his defensive points to I think, especially to get the double break in the second set. He looked really good. And yeah, this is traditionally his time of year. It's the surface and the sort of environment that he seems to really like playing in. And yeah, if he's well rested compared to some of the others, it could end up being, you know, beneficial for him, I suppose. You know, such a long season, we so often talk about players needing breaks, and obviously this one, it's not just a break that he's chosen to take. It you know, it was kind of enforced upon him and he wouldn't have wanted it. There was probably a lot to deal with, I suppose, in terms of, you know, kind of justifying whether it was fair and all that kind of thing. I'm sure he was wrestling with big questions like that, but just the actual practicality of it might end up sort of favouring him in this time of the year. Who knows?
Doubles in Los Cabos, won by Emir Kecmanovic, who I didn't know played doubles before this week, and William Bloomberg, who I didn't know existed before this week. So let's call that a surprise win for Bloomberg and Kecmanovic. Very well played.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
On to this week, where we have WTA in Toronto and ATP in Montreal. And I love this format. I love these tandem events and them switching every year. Love, love, love. So what have we got in Toronto? We've got a top quarter, which features all of the following players. Iga Swiatek, Leila Fernandez, Belinda Bencic, Serena Williams, Naomi Osaka, and Garbiñe Muguruza, all in one quarter.
31 slams.
Jeez.
And it was 33 because Azarenka was in there as well, but she's had her visa declined and has had to pull out of the tournament. But she was in that section as well. Unbelievable.
You've got Kanepi against Osaka with the winner to face Muguruza. In other sections of the draw, you've got the defending champion, Camilla Giorgi, to face Emma Raducanu in round one.
Oh, that's interesting.
Annette Kontaveit, who's the second seed, she gets a bye through to round two, faces the winner of Venus Williams, who's got Jill Teichmann in the first round. Sloane Stephens against Sophia Kenin, winner to face Maria Sakkari. Barbora Krejcikova against Karolina Pliskova, winner to probably face Amanda Anisimova. Daria Kazatkina against Bianca Andreescu, winner to face either Garcia or Corne. Andreescu's in the Andy Murray spot, isn't she, of not being seeded at these events and just in desperate need of a good draw, I think. That's really tough for her. Elena Rybakina has Marie Buzkova in round one with the winner to probably face Coco Gauff. Shrontek, the top seed, of course. Other seeds in her half, Sakkari, Jabeur, Muguruza. Kontaveit, as I said, the second seed. She's in there with Sabalenka, Badosa and Pegula. It's a big yes, please, to everything going on in Toronto.
It looks wonderful when you lay it all out like that. I mean, I could not move for about 12 hours a day just watching all of those matches.
Well, you'll have to juggle your schedule, David, because Montreal is not looking too shabby either. No big three members there. Novak Djokovic was unable to acquire an exemption to travel to Canada, so withdrew the day before the draw. Rafael Nadal withdrew a couple of days before the draw. He put out a social media post explaining that he had hoped to feel fit and ready to play Montreal, but he just needs that bit of extra time. I took that statement at face value that he still feels like he will get there for the US Open fitness-wise, but it's obviously not ideal for Rafael Nadal not to be playing in Canada, somewhere where he traditionally does have a great record, and he is somebody that traditionally needs to play himself into form. He doesn't tend to hit the ground running in the same way that Novak Djokovic does. But there was no cause for alarm, I don't think, in that statement.
No, it didn't feel like it to me. And I don't know. I mean, I don't want to try and play doctor where I've got no medical background. But at the same time, just when he pulled out of Wimbledon, it didn't feel to me like the US Open is in jeopardy at the time, and I would imagine him, he would be quite conservative with how he approaches it, and I think that these players now, they're at the point where they don't feel like they have to play all the lead up events in order to be competitive at the US Open. Best of five set matches, he will back himself that if he's physically right, he can be a threat at that tournament still.
So what have we got in Montreal? We have top seed Daniil Medvedev, who could very well face Nick Kyrgios in round number two. He's got to get past Sebastian Baez. We've got Denis Shapovalov against Alex de Minaur, round one. That match is later on this evening. Winner probably to face Grigor Dimitrov. Shapovalov, by the way, can't buy a win. My goodness me. And that's a tough first round draw for him. He is on an absolute shocker of a run of form, so we could desperately do with a win over Alex de Minaur, but that'll be tough. Alejandro Davidovich for Kina against Diego Schwartzman, round one. Wawrinka against Ruusuvuori, with the winner to face Hurkacz. Hugo Gaston against Jack Draper, that match later on this evening. Winner to face Tsitsipas. Andy Murray, Taylor Fritz, that match is tonight as well, with the winner probably to face Francis Tiafoe. Alcaraz is the second seed. Did you see the footage of his practice with Jannik Sinner?
Oh, yes.
Oh, that is a rivalry that I'm increasingly excited about. And from the footage of their practice, I feel like they might be excited about it as well.
But they like each other, don't they? And I think that they really rate each other, and they... Yeah, they probably do get a buzz out of. I mean, I haven't seen this footage. I'll send you
a link, David, because there is one point that they play that is, it sets Twitter a buzz.
Oh.
It's extraordinary. Alcaraz ends up flat on his back.
Sounds a bit like me and Solly Allsimon.
And then they hug. You know, there's a real sort of game meets game vibe.
Great.
About those two. Yeah, it's really cool. It's really, really cool. So Alcaraz, the second seed. Sinner is in his half, as is Rublev, Tsitsipas, Berrettini, Medvedev, as I said, the top seed. In his half, Kyrgios, who potential round two opponent, Hurkacz, Norrie, Ruud, and Felix Auger-Aliassime. So that's your Canada smorgasbord, folks. And given that there's so much happening, we'll be back on Thursday for a midway update pod on all things Montreal and Toronto.
And it's also great that there's two locations in Canada, because if it's raining in one, like it is at the moment,
yes,
in Montreal, I believe, then hopefully you can still watch tennis in the other one. And they're currently playing in Toronto, so that works well.
They haven't got any roofs, have they?
No.
No roofs. But also, no bad shadows.
Ah.
Mm.
So swings and roundabouts. Yeah,
good point. And good points all round.
Thanks, David. Our mascot this week, folks, is called Lucy Serena Williams-Peterson.
Aww.
She's an 8-year-old mixed poodle breed. What's she mixed with? That's what I want to know. Do you have that information, Matt? Can I just speculate?
Please do. I think that's why all the information hasn't been given. I want you to speculate.
She's got quite short legs relative to her body. So I wonder, it could be a Maltese. Just looking at her face, lovely little face. It's a lovely picture. We'll have it in our newsletter, folks, which you'll all be subscribing to anyway, so that you can become a friend and enter our Wilson US Open tickets competition. But you'll also want to see Lucy Serena Williams-Peterson. And what you'll see in the picture is that there is another dog behind Lucy who looks really grumpy about not being chosen as the mascot.
Yeah.
Like, why is Lucy getting all the limelight?
Genuinely grumpy.
That's my guess. A multi-poo. That's what a Maltese and a poodle cross is. That's my guess. Let me know if I'm right. Who's Lucy owned by?
Lucy is owned by Anne.
Oh, Anne, please let me know if I'm anywhere close to right. I do enjoy a guess the breed dog game. We have our mascots. David has Darwin.
Right, Darwin.
I've got Carter. We played it safe this week, Carter, and we've learned a lesson that playing it safe pays off. Not doesn't pay big, but it does pay off. We went with top seed Daniil Medvedev, and turns out that's a strategy that works out quite
points.
Well. Yeah. Matt has the dearly departed Gerald. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Ilana Kloss. We have our executive producers, Chris Albert Lee and Carl Weingartner. They are both top blokes. And we have shout outs, Matt.
We have Lisa Casey in Sydney, Australia.
Right, Lisa.
Hello, Lisa. Paul Casey, the golfer.
And Lisa Raymond.
Yes.
Correct. Who was one heck of a doubles player.
Yeah. You did what I was thinking. Oh, goodness, I can't think of a tennis Lisa. You've done very well there, Matt. Thank you. You've done Lisa proud.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa. Thanks for your support.
We've also got Michaela McLean in New York City.
Hello, like Michaela Krajicek.
Yes.
Very good.
Very
shout.
Good. That's the
Michaela McLean is a great name.
So we've had two Krychek's mentioned in this edition of the show, and neither of them is the Wimbledon champion of 1996. Amazing. But Michaela, thank you.
Michaela, thank you. That is a fantastic name you've got there. I do enjoy alliteration.
And we also have Alan Yonge in Chichester, which is very near me.
Oh, right, Alan, very near you.
Have we ever had any tennis players called Alan? I can't think of any.
Well, Alan Mills, the former Wimbledon referee.
Oh, and Alan Little, to who we owe the Wimbledon Library. He, I believe he suggested it should be built. He compiled the Wimbledon compendium for many years.
Fantastic.
And speaking of tennis library Alans, it's getting very niche, isn't it? Alan Chalmers, David, that used to run the little pop-up library at the Royal Albert Hall event that we used to be involved in.
Yeah, the tennis bookshop. And he used to go to lots of tournaments and run that and have the most incredible inventory of just gems from the history of tennis.
If you wanted to buy Mansour Bahrami's The Man Behind the Moustache, then Alan Chalmers, the man to go to.
Yeah, I remember Mansour used to sit there if people would line up to have them signed.
Yep, that's how book signing works.
Correct.
Anyway, none of them were as good as Alan Yonge. Thank you very much, Alan, for your support. Chichester, lovely part of the world. This has been the Tennis Podcast. Don't worry, folks, you won't have to miss us for long. We'll be back on Thursday with a Canada Midway podcast. So thank you for listening. Sign up to the newsletter, enter the competition, do all the things, tell your friends, leave us an iTunes review, and we'll speak to you on Thursday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.